Good afternoon, evening, morning, wherever we find you. You're listening to Doth Protest Too Much. And if for our listeners who follow us and subscribe and follow us on social media, you'll see that we have a new, new artwork for the podcast designed by yours truly with the help of Canva, which has basically made every single person a graphic designer today. And so, if you're curious who those people are, Thomas Cranmer is on the left side and Martin Luther is on the right side. We feel it appropriate with our hosts of the show coming from Anglican and Lutheran backgrounds. It's very reformational and it's also very Anglican and very Lutheran. So, but obviously we'll still cover the, broad array of topics across, pan-Protestant history and theology. And so today we actually have nothing against our other guests, but maybe one of the most interesting guests we've ever had on the show. He does a podcast on comic books and theology. We have the Reverend Kyle Tomlin here. Actually, it's the very Reverend because he is a dean of a convocation, from what I understand. Or is it a convocation or they call it something different where you're at?
They call them regions in our area here.
A region. And so it's kind of like a priest, it's like a region. They have a priest from a certain region that gather periodically, and the dean is kind of serves as oversight in that. Kyle is a rector of the Church of the Messiah in Fredericksburg, Virginia, where he has served since 2015. Prior to ordained ministry, he was a social worker and a counselor at Family Service Association for Atlantic County in New Jersey. He holds an MDiv or Master of Divinity from Trinity Episcopal School for Ministry in Ambridge, Pennsylvania. He describes himself as a Christ-centered reformational Anglican, as he says in the bio on the church website, so we are in good company today. He enjoys the works of Martin Luther and the Church Fathers, which excites me as I too love Luther and the Fathers, and I could spend all day in Luther's works or the Patristics. And he also likes, from the church bio site again, quote, he also likes many, many, many comic books, unquote. And that I'm afraid I can't really relate to, as I don't really know comics too well. But I think James knows some, and James is joining us today as well. Although I do have one comic. What was the very first comic book that Spider-Man ever appeared in? I don't have an original issue, so
Amazing Fantasy 15.
Amazing Fantasy 15. Yeah, I have like a reissue of that, so I'm not sitting on like millions of dollars. It's not an original. So I have that, and I also have the Illustrated DC History. And then there was a graphic novel of Batman put out in the late 80s. That, like, I guess Burton kind of used it for his inspiration for his first Batman movie.
Was it The Killing Joke?
I feel like it was by a guy named Franklin.
Frank Miller.
Dark Knight Returns.
It was Dark Knight Returns, and it got lost in a move, but a friend gave that to me. So that's about the extent of my collection.
It's a good one.
What I hear, it's a great one. I got to finish your introduction. Kyle is a host of God in Comics, along with two other priests, Jonathan Michigan and Matt Stromberg. It's a podcast that explores the intersection of Christianity and the comic book medium. Kyle holds a third degree black belt in, can you pronounce what your third degree black belt is in?
It's in Seto Okinawan Goju-Ryu.
Okay. And what is that?
It is an Okinawan martial art that blends elements of Japanese martial arts with elements of Chinese martial arts. That's sort of a basic definition.
Okay. And Kyle is also an avid fan of classic rock music. I gotta ask you, what are your two favorite classic rock bands?
It's always a hard question. I'm just going to say in the particular moment that I'm in, what I'm listening to, because I have a difficult time. I have a broad range of favorites. Right now, my favorites, the things that I'm listening to a lot are the Grateful Dead and the band Genesis.
Okay, cool. Genesis is good. Good prog. James and I are going to share ours. I was like, what exactly is classic rock? It's always
fluid. Yeah.
And now Nirvana is considered classic rock. So I don't, what's your least favorite classic rock band?
I'm going to borrow a line from my teacher and mentor, Paul Zoll, and say that it's REO Speedwagon because they're proof that Original Sin exists.
Yeah, right. James, we talked about this before the show. I wanted to surprise Kyle, but you got a heads up. What are your two favorite and your least one?
Well, so I'll give you my top three. So top is definitely Led Zeppelin. Second would probably be Lynyrd Skynyrd, but a close third would be the Marshall Tucker Band. Interesting story about that. My mom grew up with Toy and Tommy Caldwell from the Marshall Tucker Band. They grew up two houses down from my mom in Spartanburg. So got to represent the South Carolina. But Lynyrd Skynyrd edges them out a bit. So
yeah.
And the least favorite is definitely the Beatles. They're
probably he knows their fighting words for me, but
well, we'll probably lost like half our listeners because like doesn't everyone supposedly like love the Beatles? It's like the greatest band ever or something like that. my top two are Cream and Jethro Tull.
Ooh, Cream nice. Is
Cream is great.
I love Cream. I saw Jack Bruce live in 2003 for free at the Taste of Chicago. Just a big festival they have in Chicago, and you can just walk right in. At least you could then. Maybe it's not free anymore, but it was a Beatles tribute concert. Sorry, Jim. But Jack Bruce was one of like the lead. It was him, Kris Kristofferson, Mark Farner, a bunch of it was 20 years ago, so a lot of these people were a little bit younger and still alive in there. Yeah.
I can anger you too, Drew, because you know what doesn't belong in rock music? A flute.
Hard disagree on that. Jethro Tull makes it work. But Jethro Tull is cool because they came out of like the English folk revival of the 60s. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. You got like bands like Steel Eye Span and Fairport Convention. Just name drop some for our listeners to check out if they haven't. I rarely come across people who've heard of this. I mean, this stuff's like 50 years ago. It was such a fascinating time. But my least favorite's CCR. Can't stand CCR.
Oh, that's really that's a shame. That's a shame.
Yeah, it sounds like
Water Revival's great.
I would agree with you there. I like them.
Yeah.
I call it butt rock. All right, so I'm sorry. I know that's another poppy. Well, I probably offended not as many people as James with dissing the Beatles. So, all right, and so, and if you were Kyle to recommend me, because you say also you love fine stout scotch and coffee. So if you could recommend me a good scotch for like under $30, well, not 30, if you could recommend a good scotch under $80, I have no idea about scotch.
So do you like scotch? Do you like whiskey as well?
I like bourbon a lot.
Okay. So what I would recommend in this moment and this gets back even to the classic rock bit. Bob Dylan, who is one of my all-time favorites in rock, and I guess he stands for classic rock, has a line of whiskeys that are called Heaven's Door. Okay. And you can usually find a bottle of that for less than $80, but that is fantastic if you can get a hold of it.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks for the recommendation. I'll check it out. I know there's just so many, there's so much different scotches and whiskeys and vodkas. It's like insane to.
There are. Yeah, there are. When you get into the world of scotch, you got to separate the ones that taste a little more iodine-y versus the ones that have a smoother, more vanilla-y oak taste to them. So there's a lot of work in there.
Yeah. And this might be a hard one because we're asking a comic book like aficionado, but like if you have a favorite superhero.
Yeah, you know, I'll have to cheat on it a little bit and say that my favorite two heroes, and I can never divide between the two, are Batman and Spider-Man. I've been reading them both equally as long, and I have equal amount of dedication to both characters. And I like them for different reasons, but yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I have one. I mean, I liked some of the Batman movies growing up. I've enjoyed a Spider-Man movie. Enjoyed Superman movies, you know. X-Men, I love the animated series. So.
Yes.
Yeah, that was good.
Yes, I grew up with that. Yeah.
What about you, James?
So what you have to learn, Drew, is that you can't say who's your favorite. You have to say who's your favorite Marvel superhero or who's your favorite DC
superhero.
Yeah,
I know. You all do.
See, what Kyle did was far more generous and just said, I can't choose between these two, but all he had to say was my favorite Marvel superhero is Spider-Man and my favorite DC superhero is Batman. My favorite Marvel superhero is Deadpool.
Okay.
Which is that has given the kids in the youth group a lot of good chuckles because they think it's hilarious that their priest likes Deadpool because yeah. Deadpool is irreverent to say the least. And then my favorite DC superhero would definitely have to be Batman, but a close second would be the Flash.
I was about to cut in and like, let me guess your favorite DC hero.
I love the Flash, especially the Carmine Infantino 1950s run of the Flash. The Silver Age, it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know James, you got our foundational questions to kind of like,
all right,
rolling here.
Well, let's dig in. So just some background, Kyle and I have known each other for 6 years, and Kyle was actually the guy that got me back into reading comic books. He also happens to be my daughter's godfather. He and his wife are her godparents. So Kyle and I will probably banter a bit because we've known each other quite a bit, quite a while, but one of the things that we frequently talk about and was the impetus for this conversation was that if you are a priest and are fascinated with theology and enjoy reading theology, comic books are often frustrating because they can be examples of really bad theology. And to foreshadow a bit, they can also be examples of good theology. But on the whole, a lot of bad theology comes into play. And so the first question I was going to ask you, Kyle, is if you had to say, what would be the most pervasive bad teaching, false teaching, heresy that you could see and encouraged in comic books?
Yeah. Can I kind of cheat on this question just a little? And well, I would say that there's probably three things that jump out to me. The first, of course, and this might sound quite obvious, is that in comic books, the universe that you're dealing with is a Christless universe.
Right.
And there's a problem right there from the get-go. Jesus has occasionally made appearances in comic books throughout the course of history, but generally when he makes an appearance, he tends to be more of the good human teacher that, you know, people seek to follow rather than the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ that Scripture presents him as. So I would say that that's one particular problem in comic books, is that you start with that fundamental idea that the universe is devoid of Christ, that it's devoid of the Trinity. And, you know, a lot of things go in very different directions as a result of that. I think the second thing, and this follows off of it, is that basically the universe is made up in comic books of a series of gods, whether we're talking about the DC universe or the Marvel universe or any of the other numbers of comic book companies that are out there. Generally, the universe is made up of some pantheon of good gods and bad gods. And generally speaking, they kind of play into this dualistic idea that has often found its way into Christianity, that you've got, you know, the good gods and bad gods of equal power who are just duking it out for supremacy in this world. So I think those two things kind of take shape. That's what I would say would be the first together. The second would really be that there's tends to be a fairly Gnostic picture of life in comic books. That is that the spirit world is good and the material world is bad. When we've seen depictions of the afterlife in comic books, usually it's that people become disembodied spirits and they go on to inhabit some spiritual realm, which, as we know, has kind of crept into Christian thinking at times as well. So those are two. The third one I would say is that there has tended to be in comic books, generally speaking, a false picture of humanity, in the sense that human beings are generally good creatures who make bad choices.
Right.
And so there's been a lot of encouragement in comic books to kind of use superheroes as models to encourage people to live better lives. So I think those three things really together kind of paint a picture of some of the bad teachings that we see in comics.
So I know James let you know that, you know, we're not a gotcha podcast.
Yeah.
And we're really not, but I do like in episodes to kind of like entertain a devil's advocate.
Sure.
Argument, just to see, just in order to help you probably, you know, really convince us. So like my first thought when I hear that's like, well, why do comic books need to have Christian theology, right? Like why would comic books be where we would go to for theological insights anyways? Like my first thoughts, like we like when you talk about the worldview, as you say, that's presented in a lot of comics, or just like kind of whether intentionally or not, but just kind of the view of humanity that they assume, a lot of it kind of has a lot of similarity to the things that ancient pagan cultures exalted, honor, courage, you know, but they didn't like exalt things like humility and redemption as much. And you know, like I remember as a kid, I enjoyed Greek mythology. I thought the stories were fascinating. I did not believe any of it as my religion.
Sure.
But I thought it was fun. And there is some overlap there, because I'm sure there's tons of graphic novels and comic books on the Greek gods. But I guess what do you say to that? Is there a danger in, because comic books are, I mean, people really do, I don't want to say they treat it like a religion, but it's for a lot of people, a lot of that lore, whether it's Marvel lore, Lucasfilm, whatever, is so, it's such a part of their identity, because, you know, it hit them when they were a kid, and they were just like, they were grew up loving it and it's just a big part of who they are. So do you see potential dangers, I guess, in the messaging of some of it because it contrasts Christianity so much?
Yeah, I want to be careful not to definitely not to paint any picture that I think has sometimes crept up in more fundamentalist Christianity, where we should like avoid anything that disagrees with the Christian faith in any way, right? Because I think that's not helpful at all. I think there is benefit to reading comic books. I don't think we should expect comic books to be Christian. I mean, there are Christian comic books out there. There's a whole subgenre of Christian comics that exists, but I don't think we should expect it. I do think that generally what comic books tend to do, much like any kind of novels or things that we would read along that line, a lot of them tend to paint a picture of what we're wrestling with in life, what we're struggling with, what we're trying to make sense of. And I think comics have a value in that regard. I think that they do definitely paint a picture of the problems that human beings experience. And I can say more about that later. I think that they also tend to paint a picture of where we look for hope, what we're looking for in terms of meaning and purpose in life. And in that regard, I would say there's sometimes a danger because we can look for our hope and meaning in the wrong places. You know, in fact, we do. I mean, that's what human nature does. So while I would, think comic book reading is good, I would definitely caution people about looking to comic books for meaning and for hope, looking for a worldview to be painted out of them, because that worldview might not prove to be the true worldview. In the same way that you wouldn't want to look to Greek myths, you can enjoy them and you can learn things from them, but you wouldn't want to look to them for meaning and hope.
And I'll confess, I love film and good cinema, and I've never seen how people could get so much into the fantasy realm, just like personally, especially with superhero universes. Like, I think a lot of them, those stories can be exciting and fun, and even have artistic quality and whatnot. But I always, like, for me, my top 10 favorite films, I don't think I would have anything of that nature. It'd be more like dramas or thrillers or something. I don't know. It's movies and stories that perhaps do show the depravity of humans. And there was, I'm sure you're familiar with Fleming Rutledge, the Episcopal priest and writer. She said that the message of the cross can really preach and resonate to people today, because some of the best stories are about one of either two things: transformation or redemption. Mm-hmm. And both of those are central to the message of the cross. And I don't know, I just thought that was, I made a connection, like, wow, I guess I realized all the books and movies that seemingly don't have any religious, connection, nevertheless do present those very real human things, right? I don't know. It's just kind of an insight I had going off to what you just said.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great insight. And that's exactly why I think comics have value in for Christians even reading them, right? Is that we can see those stories of redemption and transformation well written in a lot of comic books. And they can be launch pads because of the popularity of comic books today, especially with things like the Marvel movies and some of the DC movies. You can see that those kinds of stories, and they become in ways gateways towards apologetics and evangelism for people. You know, they become ways to talk about the Christian faith with people. I think there's great value.
Oh, I was going to say, can I say something real quick, James, to because it won't be relevant in a minute when you said, all the Marvel movies and some of the DC movies. as much as I've not followed superhero stuff, because there's like a movie out every month now. From what I gather and from what I've, the little I've seen, whenever I've come across a Marvel thing, it's usually a better than a DC thing.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone raved about the Wonder Woman movie. I did not see what it was all about, what the hype was all about. Same for even like I tried watching the director's cut of Justice League.
Yeah.
I didn't have enough hours in my life. But also I was like, why is this? Because they said the original cut, whatever, was like a bomb, and then like the director's cut was like a 5-star. I'm like, I was getting bored with it. So, you know.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the DC movies have tended to take the characters away from their comic book selves and try to reinvent them as darker characters than what they actually are. And I think that they've struggled and failed on a number of levels as a result of that.
Well, and one thing to keep in mind too is that comic books are by nature attractive to people who are in a vulnerable place. Like Superman was created by Jerry Siegel and what was Schuster's first name?
Joe
Schuster. Yeah.
Yep.
Because they were young Jewish men growing up in New York, and Superman became a kind of golem, a protector in their mind, someone that they wish existed because of the hardships they experienced when they were growing up. And so people look to superheroes and look to fantasy sometimes as an escape from an overly oppressive reality. And so that's where what Kyle was talking about with apologetics can come in, that you realize that the world is broken. And so people look to a superhero, they look to something outside of themselves for a redemptive event, you know. And one of those things that's pervasive in comics is the substitutionary sacrifice. So like there is so much crossover between Christianity and the best of comics, but it's just a lot of the time comics are deeply influenced also by an sort of a religious milieu that it gets some of the diagnosis right, but it doesn't get quite the solution right. Would you say that's fair, Kyle?
I would say that's fair. It's very well said.
So I'm a huge fan of reading and talking about comics because I think it's marvelous. I'm not a big drama movie fan. I mean, I've always been, when I watch movies and TV, I tend to do that as an escape from daily life. Like I'll give you, for instance, Rachel, my wife watched This Is Us. I absolutely could not stand that show. And it's not because it was a bad show. It's because it was way too real. And so for me, I love watching Jedis duking it out with lightsabers because it excites my inner 10-year-old. But if I'm watching someone on a deathbed, like I do that in my daily life as a priest, I don't want to see that on TV, you know? So that's kind of where I come from with my love for comics and sort of where I feel protective over the medium, if that makes sense.
James, it's funny. I went through that too. Kind of my first 4 years of ministry, I didn't want to watch anything serious whatsoever. We watched a lot of like Jonah Hill, James Franco, and what's his name?
Judd Apatow, the Judd Apatow movie.
Just a bunch of like comedies from like the early to mid 2010s. Like that's like all we.
Seth Rogen is probably who you're talking about.
Seth Rogen. Gosh, yeah. How could I forget his name? But You just watch like silly comedies, like, you know, that they were not good movies, but there's I didn't want a movie that made me think or ponder, but
right.
I don't know. I'm weird. I've been kind of branching out again in my cinephilia a little bit here and there, but
sure. But you were talking about the universal monsters, right? I mean, no mummy is going to literally come out of a crypt.
And those are, yeah, those are a little, those are more fun and detached, you know. Those aren't like realist movies by any means. But yeah, I've really brilliant into that. I saw a list. You see me post on Facebook. It's a list, yes, of like every universal monster from the 20s to the 1960s. It was like all encompassing because they even had like the silent movies with Lon Chaney of like Phantom and Hunchback. But I've ever since Midsummer, I've been like kind of watching movies, like either streaming them, finding them for free, or sometimes just renting them. But my favorite so far, yeah, I'll always love Lon Chaney's Phantom. The movie The Raven with Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff, they did a series of movies. Raven is awesome. It's like not exactly based on the Poe story, but it's like it's like a mad scientist with a bunch of Poe-esque, Poe-inspired like torture things in his basement, and everyone has to escape out of the house. Really good movie. And then Son of Dracula, which is which was one of the sequels to the Lugosi. Chaney Jr. plays Dracula in it, and which is like sacrilege for, you know, people who love Dracula, but I just thought it was a really well done movie, and I guess it got good reviews when it came out, but you know.
Yeah,
but I digress. So
no, that's fine. That's fine. Young Frankenstein, great universal monster movie.
Now that I'm watching all the I think I could go back, because when I first saw Young Frankenstein, I'm like, why is this funny? Oh, it was for a generation who grew up on all, yes, the movies, and this is a parody of it, right?
Right.
I would, yep, get it more now, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you would.
Yeah. So back to comic books, but all of this is germane. Back to comic books, though. Are there any examples of superheroes that embody particularly bad theology? And this is not a question where we're hating on the medium of superhero comics, because as we've all expressed, or at least as Kyle and I have expressed, and Drew is an acquaintance of comics and does not hate them, perhaps just isn't as well versed. We can fix that, don't worry. But we'll get to the good side too. But we want to start with the bad. What would you say are some examples of superheroes, or maybe even just particular writers who embody bad theology in the comics that they write?
Yeah, I mean, there are probably a lot that could be named. I think just kind of playing off of some of the things that I said earlier, the character of Green Lantern strikes me as someone who has a somewhat bad theology behind him. You know, the story of Green Lantern is that there's this intergalactic space force that basically keeps the universe in order. It's the Guardians, and the Guardians the Guardians go out and they find these men who have strong willpower, and who have such strong willpower that they have no fear. And they make them into Green Lanterns, and Green Lantern's job, all the Green Lantern's job, is to patrol the universe and make sure that peace and order are kept in play. The problem with Green Lantern is that there's a character named Abin Sur, who is an alien who's a Green Lantern who is dying. He crashes to Earth in an attempt to find a new Green Lantern to replace him, and he discovers a pilot named Hal Jordan. And Hal Jordan is picked to be the next Green Lantern because Hal Jordan has this exceedingly strong willpower, and he has this willpower that can overcome fear. The bad theology in it, of course, is that while it is true that we human beings do have strong willpower, we do, right? We don't really have a strong enough willpower to overcome fear. And I think you you can ultimately set people up to believe that such a thing is possible if people buy into that, you know?
Right.
And that, I mean, we can talk more about will and willpower and stuff, but I think that's an example where there's a little bit of bad theology about the human condition at right. work. What are human beings? What abilities and powers do human beings actually possess? What are we able to do and not do, right? Green Lantern sort of creates a high anthropology, sets us up in a place where human nature is much greater than what I think human nature really is. I think you can see that played out in Superman quite frequently, and I love Superman. I mean, Superman's my second/third favorite superhero in the mix. But Superman, based on the writer of Superman, there's been a tendency to use Superman as a kind of marker of aspiration, that we can all achieve this element of greatness that Superman has. And let me lump one other piece in there, and then I'll round out that thought. You also find some similar types of things in Spider-Man. Many people know Spider-Man's mantra, which is with great power comes great responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. This is what Uncle Ben says to Spider-Man when he's dying. It's what he taught him. And so the expectation that runs through Spider-Man's life is that he's been given this great power, and consequently, he's supposed to act at a greater level. He's supposed to be a better person. The downside in all of the Spider-Man stories is that Spider-Man can never measure up to that level that he's being given. And what he's got is failure after failure, loss after loss. So all of that is to say that one of the things that seems to happen in comic books quite a bit here with this sort of bad theology that has a high anthropology, a high view of human nature, is that we're left with, in Lutheran and Reformational Anglican terms, we're left with the law. Mm-hmm. So we're left with this idea that humans actually have an ability to rise to this great level and achieve these great things. And so I think that's some evidence of some of the kind of bad theology that we can see at work in certain characters.
Right.
One other one I'll throw in for you is, recently, the character Moon Knight, who was a fairly obscure character
right.
in the comic book world, you know, they had written series about Moon Knight from the late 70s through the 1980s. They had, you know, short runs, and then the character would kind of fade away, and they'd bring him back, and he got revived a couple of times in the 90s and the 2000s, and the basic elements of his character got shape-shifted, and they changed, and he became, you know, slightly different from what they intended him to be in the beginning. He recently got a Disney Plus show as part of the Marvel Universe, and Moon Knight's a great show. I found it enjoyable. I know James, you kind of struggled with it a little bit upon first watching.
Yeah.
And
after rumination, I feel better with how it ended. Also, after reading some Moon Knight comics, I feel better about how it ended.
That helped. Yeah. I heard other people too say that they kind of didn't know what to make of the show after it was all over. But one thing that Moon Knight has a lot to do with Egyptian gods and the Egyptian gods granting powers to certain human beings to be their avatars, to be their basically like their under gods to operate in this world. One of the things Moon Knight painted at the very end, and I'm sorry to spoil this, you can turn the podcast off, I guess, and go watch the entire run of Moon Knight if you have to. But one thing Moon Knight left us with was the idea that gods in general are selfish and vengeful.
Right.
And I think that does a big disservice to things like the Christian faith, right? Because if this is what people are generally hearing in these things, that you can't trust gods because gods are selfish and gods are vengeful, that's an issue.
Right.
Well, and I've experienced with a lot of, with a more and more de-Christianized
social environment, a lot of people hold those views of the Christian God.
Yep.
Sometimes it may come from hurt they experienced in the church, but more often than not, I'm just really finding people, they have a perception of Christians and they don't know any better because they've never really talked to a Christian and they've probably never actually gone to a church. You know, a lot of just the kind of the little, you know, references to God or divinity or deity you do get in culture and pop culture is very much like more paganistic conceptions of God and deity. And so it's and that's how they write it all off as that. And so
Add a couple of examples too that from my own reading I think presents some theological problems. So Batman tends to present a theological problem in the sense that Batman is the embodiment of vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
Like Batman is the one who takes vengeance upon the evildoers. And I mean, scripture, not to negate what was just said a second ago, but scripture is clear. God says, vengeance is mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that a human being would take that mantle upon himself is already brazen and troublesome. And I say that after having said Batman is my favorite DC superhero. So let's be clear on that. I love a good Batman story, but I recognize out the gate that Batman has some serious issues in terms of like theological outlook. Another that presents, I think, a deeper problem with regard to theology specifically is Constantine. And this is one of those comics that's perhaps even esoteric for comic book readers. So Constantine, John Constantine's Hellblazer is the name of the comic. And you may have seen the Keanu Reeves movie that came out in 2000 called Constantine. Which at the time I loved, and I think it's aged pretty well. It's got one of my favorite lines from any movie in it. Constantine, Keanu Reeves is speaking with Rachel Weisz's character, and she says to him, "I don't believe in the devil," and he responds, "Why? He believes in you." I thought that was pretty clever right off the bat, But what Constantine does is it presents a kind of, and Moon Knight does this too, a kind of weighing of the scales where your good deeds are weighed against your bad deeds. And if you do just enough good, then God will welcome you into heaven. But if you do one more bad thing than good thing, then down to hell you go to be tormented forever. And that is, that's one of those deeply problematic things that I think horribly afflicts Christianity. And I don't think we can say that that's necessarily directly caused by comic books, because comic books are not as pervasive as they once were, but it is, I think, caused by the valorizing of the human will and the valorizing of human ability. And also seeing other religions that are moralistic and legalistic. So I kind of answered the third question I was going to ask you, Kyle, which was if you had to say what would Batman's theological Achilles heel be? Feel free to add to what I said if you'd like, or if you want to disagree, that's fine too.
Yeah, no, I mean, a couple of things I'd say in response to what you just said. First of all, yes, I do definitely agree with your perspective on Batman. I think Batman's fundamental problem is that Batman has no faith in God.
Right.
He's broken. He's hurt. He's, you know, witnessed the death of his parents, and in that vacuum of of dealing with the hiddenness of God, because the question, while it's never been posed in Batman, is really there in some ways. You know, why did God not stop this? Why did God not prevent this from happening? And so in that kind of hiddenness of God moment, Batman really does the only thing that he thinks he can do, which is to assume the reins of control himself.
Right.
Right. He's going to be the one to fix the problem. If there's injustice in the world, well, it's down to him to be smarter and better and tougher than every single criminal and evildoer that he could possibly encounter. And ultimately, his goal is to fix the problem. He believes that he can be greater than being just a human being. I mean, that's really Batman's got an aspirancy to being God in himself, and thinks he can be greater than that. And there's a very telling and moving scene a couple of years ago, maybe around 2018, writer Tom King did a run on Batman. And I really like this one thing that King did with Batman. He finally brought Batman to this really, really rough patch of his life. And a lot of things were going wrong for Batman at that point. And there's this moving scene where Batman confesses, "I'm just a damn man." You know, he gets to a point of recognizing that he's not the God he thought he was, but he's a human. And he's got all the brokenness and the inabilities that all of us humans have. So I do think that is one particular issue that Batman, you know, is dealing with. I will say, just as an aside, connected to this, but as a slight aside, Batman has also tended to propagate Marcionism. If you want to talk about heresies, Batman has propagated Marcionism. There's a scene that has stood out since I was 12 years old. I read this issue, Batman 412, where Batman and Jason Todd Robin are finishing up their nightly rounds, and they're on a rooftop together, and the church bells start ringing. And Robin asks Batman why you know, they don't go to church, what Batman believes about this stuff. And Batman's response was, "Well, basically, I hold to an Old Testament view rather than a New Testament view of God." Following the Marcionite thinking, right? That God is the Old Testament God is a vengeful sort of God. That's right. The God Batman sticks with versus a grace God of the New Testament, which we know is not accurate.
Interestingly, because he uses the Marcion categories.
Right.
But Marcion, at the end, him and Marcion wouldn't agree, because Marcion's going to go with his so-called New Testament God versus right. Old Testament. Batman's going to go with the old. So yeah. I'm just curious, kind of like as I was listening to you talk about, you know, the allergy to like being a human being or vulnerability and you know the limitations of being human that comic books see, you know, they get us hooked because it's a, you know, an aspiration to rise above that. Again, as James said, I'm not well versed in that universe, but I love action movies. Whether it's older, you know, Sylvester Stallone, Rambo, of course, those are old and new because they keep doing them, you know, older Bruce Willis or like Jason Statham movies. I love seeing like people, like one person put in like a crazy situation that reasonably no person could get out of, one person against like, you know, like in Commando, like all odds against them, but they get through it. It's just like, they're just like fun movies to watch, right? I just love, like, I love a good action movie. You know, Olympus Has Fallen with Gerard Butler, you know, like, so I'm like, you know, people die, you know, it's basically the Die Hard thing just in the White House. But
right.
Like, I wonder if some of that is there. If we apply this same lens to looking at that genre, that type of entertainment through, if it's really the same critique we can have. Because I'm seeing it as yes. I mean, it's
right.
There's people who've gotten medals of honor for you know, remarkable heroic acts in like wars and stuff, but most of those people that have those medals of honor would have said, you know, I could have been dead any minute. I was, you know, it's a lot of them recognized their own vulnerability, interestingly, you know. So mm-hmm. I just wonder if that, you know, I'm thinking out loud, kind of just not just comic books, but in a lot of other entertainment, you see this, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and there's actually a tie-in between that kind of action movie feel and the affinity that we have for that and the Christian faith in the person of Sam Childers. Have you ever heard the story of Sam Childers? He's known mm-hmm. affectionately as the machine gun preacher.
Oh, I've heard of him. Yes.
Yeah. So he, Sam Childers was, if memory serves, in a biker gang when he was a young adult, came to faith and became a preacher and went to the Sudan for some mission thing, and saw the havoc that was being wreaked by Joseph Kony and the Lord's Resistance Army. They were taking children from the Sudan and from Uganda and enlisting them in this Lord's Resistance Army, which, if memory serves, also is a kind of bad theology in and of itself. It's like almost, I think Joseph Kony said that he was the embodiment of the Holy Spirit or something like that. So it's almost kind of a Montanism, but it was very deeply problematic because he was, you know, he was kidnapping kids and enlisting them in this this war. And Sam Childers stayed there and would actually go and liberate camps of these kids. He'd go fight. I mean, he'd go fully armed and liberate these camps and shoot people. And I remember watching an interview with him, and Gerard Butler played him in a movie, by the way, called Machine Gun Preacher. And I remember watching an interview with Sam Childers, and he said, you know, the guy was kind of, the interviewer was saying basically like, how do you justify what you're doing? He's like, well, people don't like what I do, but then I'm the first person they come to when their kid gets kidnapped. Like it's one of those things that, you know, like I guess I've sort of digressed here, but I find the story fascinating because it's one of those areas where action movies and Christianity kind of connect and perhaps butt against each other, but also it's a fascinating thought experiment. What do y'all think about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's definitely some crossover there. And I think going back, Drew, to your comments about the action movies as well, I mean, we definitely have moments in real life, apart from comic books and movies, where people do kind of rise up and you know, do what needs to be done, and they win the medals and, you know, the honors at times and things of that nature. I think the biggest issue, at least in my thinking, with some of the stuff that we see both in movies and comic books, has to do with kind of recognizing the two kingdoms theology. I think that Batman, so I can't remember whether you all have done something on two kingdoms theology or not, but the shorthand of it is
Bradford Little John did an episode, but give us a recap. Cause I was thinking this all along. I'm like, you know, can I appreciate action movies and comic books on a city of earth level and not a city of God level, you know? What were you going to say?
Yeah. So basically in Luther's thinking, and I know that the Reformed have a slightly different take on this, but in Luther's thinking, because that's what I'm well versed in, he said that basically there's two kingdoms at work in this world, both of which are operative by God. So there is the kingdom of God, which is wherever the gospel is being proclaimed and people are being converted to the faith and God is doing, you know, the work of the cross in the world. That's God's, you know, God's kingdom at work in that regard. God's right-hand kingdom, I think, is how Luther put it. God's left-hand kingdom is the is effectively the governments of the world. It's law and order in this world. It's the institution of order and structure to sort of keep everybody safe so that there's actually room for the gospel to be preached. Because otherwise, if there was not that structure of having laws and rules and governments, then there would be anarchy and everybody would just do whatever they wanted to do. And that would end in whoever's the strongest being the last one on top of the heap of bodies, right? So, yes. So Luther divided those two things and says, we recognize that God is at work in both of these places, but in different ways. So it's the job of police and military and things of that nature in Luther's thinking to defend people, to protect people, to do what's necessary to make sure that law and order actually happens. It's not the job of individuals to step into that role and try to assume that power and that authority for them. Now, I do find it very interesting that here in the West, and I think this goes all the way back to the Revolutionary War and times like that, we've tended to have this little bit of suspicion that always lingers about government and law and order. And I'm not trying to get too political here, but I just think human nature has kind of lent itself in that way, right? That we've always been a little suspicious. So I find it interesting that we really do seem to like in the West the story of the guy who goes rogue and does what needs to be done because we can't rely on God's left-hand kingdom to actually deal with the problems.
Right.
And I think we find that in comics and action movies, right? We sort of like that narrative that right. this guy took the power in his hands because they weren't getting it done otherwise, but he could get it done. So I,
yeah. Yeah. And I've seen the kind of idolization of the vigilante justice, right? Yeah. And I see it more and more with the disillusionment in our institutions, which I think is in part understandable, but I see it like take it into your own hands because you can't trust the broken court system, you can't trust this and that. I'm like, all right, but when you do that, you do start to, you don't want to open that door because due process is a, you know, big part of justice and fairness. And, you know, there's something to be said about order, even if that order is broken because the human world is broken. So,
yeah, that's right. Well said. Well said. There's even been some critiques in Batman comics recently, critiques of Batman by law enforcement agents in that same vein. That Batman's assuming this control, but he doesn't have the ability to actually carry out the due process. He just breaks a whole bunch of rules to kind of get these criminals and then leaves it to the police to deal with them after that. And doesn't make for a smooth justice system.
Yeah. Well, and one of the writers of Batman who caricaturizes Batman in that direction is Frank Miller. So you mm-hmm. were talking about your Frank Miller Dark Knight Returns comic that you lost, Drew. When you get into the older or the newer, Frank Miller Batman comics, a lot of what Frank Miller does is like when you read him, you think Frank Miller has got to hate Batman because he turns Batman into like the meanest, like most vile person you've ever met, you know, like beating Robin in the Batcave kind of bad guy. And so it is a criticism of this valorizing of, or, you know, the considering morally good of this taking upon yourself the power of vengeance. And so I think that's a good segue into sort of a last, some finishing touches on this that can help people among our listenership to realize that comics aren't bad. Like there are good examples of theology in comics. And though this is not a comic book podcast like God and Comics, You know, I'm a huge fan of comics. I know Charlie's a fan of comics. And so there are some things that, as we were saying at the beginning, can be ways for us as Christians to engage in apologetics with people through the pop culture medium. So Kyle, what would you say are some examples of good theology? And since we're a reformational podcast, a reformationally minded, all three of us are, and our the other two co-hosts of this podcast are as well, what would you say are examples of good theology and perhaps even some examples of the reality of the bound will in comics?
Yeah. So let me go back to the Spider-Man one for a beginning of an answer to that question. I think one of the interesting things with Spider-Man, and this is where it can turn into good theology. I mentioned earlier that Spider-Man has the mantra, with great power comes great responsibility. Right. That's really the voice of the law that speaks. I mean, I think we all can recognize that we have this internal pressure that really does say to us, you should be perfect. You should be better than what you are. You've been given these many gifts and you should be, you know, using them in a better way than you are. And we, as I mentioned as well, you look at Spider-Man's life and wait in the wake of that law that he's got on him and the failures that he's had, and the deaths that have occurred because of his negligence or his failure to act in any given moment. And I think you've got a good springboard in that moment to be able to talk to people about the reality of human life. I think you can talk to people about our own failures, about our own sense of needing to be better, but somehow we're not capable of being better, right? We can talk about the idea of the bound will out of that. We can, you know, discuss the fact that humans really aren't free creatures, that we are, in fact, captive to forces outside of ourselves. And those things are sin and death in Christian language, right? That we are very much slaves to our own self-interest, which Spider-Man evidences. And there's great illustrations of that. That we're subject to the pain of death, which we see in Spider-Man. I think that the other great thing that we can see with Spider-Man, although only one time in the history of that character, and he's been around since 1962 now, only one time in the history of that character have they ever gotten to this moment, and it was only recently. The thing that Spider-Man needs more than anything else is a word of absolution. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing that he has not gotten until very recently. And of course, it didn't come out in a cleanly Christian way, but it came about in a story where someone said forgiveness is what's needed in this moment. You know, that there needs to be forgiveness for the things that you failed to do in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a beautiful moment when it happened, nearly brought tears to my eyes, you know, because that's what life boils down to. We all need that forgiveness and that freedom that comes with that. So I think that's a good example of where comic books can be really helpful and useful. This is going to sound weird, but just go with me here. I think another example where comic books are good and have something to offer is when you look at characters like the Watchmen or maybe even the Boys. And okay. And I know that both have been made into movies and TV shows. You know, kids, if any kids are listening to this, don't take my recommendation here. Those are not things that children should be watching. Right. But the one thing that I find about both the Watchmen and the Boys is that they're depictions of real human nature. Mm-hmm. And I think they're beneficial because I think they become windows of opportunity to talk about the fact that even these heroes are flawed and broken people. You know, whereas in the past, the tendency was to want to put the heroes up on the godlike pedestal. You know, that's what really happened with the characters, certainly in the 1950s, 1960s, and so forth. Now we can sort of look at those characters through series like The Watchmen and The Boys, which tries to say, hey, you know what? We used to do that with those characters, but if they're really human, they've got to be as messed up as a lot of us are. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's some good illustrations of the reality of being a human being, of being a sinful human being in those things. And I think that they're helpful in that way. Now, of course, they don't offer answers.
Right.
The Boys and Watchmen kind of just fall into a nihilism, utter depravity, more than anything else. But I will say that the biggest positive that we have in comic books, aside from those depictions of human nature that become touch points for us talking about the gospel with other people, is that there's one overriding story in all comic books, and that is we need to be rescued from something.
Right.
That's the one theme that I think you could trace through at least all the superhero comics. You kind of have to leave out some of the other stuff that's out there that's non-superhero. Right. But I think in all the superhero comics, there's tends to be a theme that there are things in this world that are bigger than what we can handle, despite the kind of promptings for us to rise up and be better or to take matters into our own hands. Inevitably, in all those circumstances, there seems to be some failure. Mm-hmm. But there always seems to be this expression that we need rescue, we need help.
Right.
And I like, in light of that, I like what I saw a couple of years ago. There was a t-shirt that was going around, and there was a DC version and a Marvel version, but the t-shirt showed Jesus sitting in the middle of these superheroes. And Jesus said, "Let me tell you how I saved the world." And I thought, that's beautiful, right? Like, that just captures, we all know we need rescue. These other guys can't do it, but Jesus can, and Jesus did. And so that's just, I think, a good opportunity for apologetics and evangelism, for being able to share God's word with people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I was going to say something else, but I feel like that was a good way to end it.
Yeah. Yeah. Kyle, thanks for being on. I mean, it kind of challenged me to, interested me a little bit in just getting more familiar with these franchises and, you know, I guess sagas of these different superheroes and everything. And but I think you spoke a lot of truth here. The need for grace, which is so central to, you know, the language of our podcast. I did not see that t-shirt that he spoke about. I mean, it's true. It's kind of
cool too, but it's kind of corny,
but but it is true, because I think so. I know this podcast will get just by publishing it with some hashtags for Marvel, DC, and superheroes, that we might have some crossover audiences, so we might have some new listeners through this episode. I'm curious on that. What's kind of the listenership of your podcast? Do you have a rough idea of for God and Comics?
In terms of like age or
I guess just even like people that may interact or engage with, I mean, is it people from the church, or are there people that kind of they listen to comic book stuff, and so they somehow came across your podcast, and now they've tuned in a little bit and have heard some of this?
Yeah, I think we've tended to have some folks who have been steeped in comic books, but mm-hmm. they're also wrestling with spiritual issues and trying to figure out what they believe. Mm-hmm. And so a number of those folks listen to us. We've also got people from the church who have often listened to us simply because they either have us as their priest,
right,
and they're curious about why their priest is so into comic books, and they mm-hmm. listen for that reason. So, yeah, I know we've also got some kids that listen to our podcast as a result of Jonathan Michigan being involved with a Roman Catholic school. Some of the kids have gotten intrigued by why their priest at the school is reading comics. So, yeah.
Well, thanks for being on here. And you know, I'm going to tune into God and comics, and that will probably be a good starter for me to know anything about the comic book and the comic book universe.
Yeah.
There's just a million references in each episode. So.
Yep.
And you know, when you're ready, Drew, you just come to Kyle and me, and we'll give you plenty of recommendations for a good starting point.
I bet. Yeah. And I won't try to lose them in a move like I did a Frank Miller book, which I'm.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, God bless and take care.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.